Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley. So you've probably heard someone in recent years tell you that autonomous vehicles are the future of driving. Companies like Google and Uber have begun testing cars that drive themselves, and some of those tests have been done right here in Boston. However, a new study out of MIT finds that a number of people are not all that interested in self-driving technology. Here to tell us more about the study and other news in tech this week is WBUR's Bostonomics reporter, Asma Khalid. Hi, Asma.
Hey, Tanya.
Okay, so what's happening here? I thought we'd all be excited to be able to listen to music and read books and stuff and not have to drive our cars.
So, Tanya, I guess a part of it maybe is about feeling in control. The survey asked about 3,000 people, and what's remarkable is that nearly half of them, 48%, said that they would never purchase a completely self-driving car. We spoke to Brian Reamer about this. He's a research scientist at the MIT Age Lab, which conducted this survey, and he pointed out that humans don't have experience really giving control over to a robot. You know, we're not really good at that. I mean, some people probably don't even like being in that passenger seat.
I believe that a lot of listeners will agree with this and understand this skepticism, especially here in Boston, because there is no grid here in Boston. When you're talking about the roadways, it's crazy. I mean,
and those aggressive drivers.
Right. Aggressive drivers. People thinking about being on the Jamaica Way at 5:30 in the afternoon, in the evening, and knowing what passengers, when they hop out of the MBTA bus and onto oncoming traffic, I mean, like all of it. I mean, it's just a mess. And so you think about having like these autonomous cars also in the mix, like,
yeah,
prone to accidents.
I think that there is some truth to that, right? But I think also, though, Tanya, it's the fact that some folks don't really trust the technology. And Brian Reamer over at MIT said that in part the reason that there is this lack of trust is that the companies working on developing this technology, right, they've been pouring billions of dollars into it, but they haven't necessarily been very transparent and public. And in order for consumers to really relinquish control, they need to feel safe. I think the question, as he told us, is what does that really mean?
Is there a certain target of half the accidents? Or we expect even something perhaps almost illogical? Automated vehicles should never even be involved in the most minor of crashes, hitting a curb. You know, what is the benchmark? Right now, humans look at robots and say they should be better than us. What is safe enough?
Right. I mean, Tanya, that is the question. What is safe enough? The study found that confidence in autonomous vehicles is down among all age groups.
Even millennials?
Even millennials, right? Even these people who have grown up using technology are addicted to their cell phones. So this is the second year that MIT has done this study, so they do have a sense of comparison. Last year, they found that about 40% of people between the ages of 25 and 34 said that they were comfortable with the technology. This year, that number is down to 20%.
Really?
It is, right? And so I think what's interesting about this is that millennials really do rely on technology. And so when I asked Brian about this, it seemed to say that he feels like people use technology, but they don't trust it, right? We're not willing to trust a cell phone with our lives because we know that our cell phones can fail. They are not 100% of the time working for us.
Right, right. We use them. We see their fails. We know that. So what does he think we need to do? Should companies just stop investing in self-driving technology?
He said no, not at all. He just thinks that there needs to be more transparency and so that the public feels like they can come along, right? Some of this feels like it's happening behind closed doors. There's not a good sense of what the risks are involved. He actually feels like if the public is aware, there is then this market, the public will feel sort of more confident in the process. And that's what he thinks needs to happen.
That's interesting. Okay, so let's switch gears to some other news this week. This one involves a possible merging of two sectors that are very important here in Boston, tech and finance. Here's a clip of Fidelity CEO Abigail Johnson speaking to an audience at a blockchain summit in New York earlier this week.
Some of you might be wondering, why am I here today? Well, I can tell you plenty of my colleagues back in Boston are asking the same question. I'm here because I love this stuff. Bitcoin, Ethereum, blockchain technology, all that the future might hold.
Johnson doesn't speak often, right, to the public.
No.
But she's really excited about this blockchain.
She is. And so first, Tanya, I should just briefly explain, you know, blockchain is essentially that underlying technology behind Bitcoin. It's the digital currency that made a big splash a few years ago. And evangelists say that it could do for finance what the internet did for communication, right? But you're right. I think what is mostly interesting about this all is just the sheer fact that we heard Abby Johnson, the CEO of Fidelity, talk. You know, she is famously private, and here she is giving a rare public talk, not at a finance conference, but at a blockchain confab.
Did she make any announcements about future plans to use tech at Fidelity?
So she said that she has this standing meeting at Fidelity where she gets updates on all the blockchain projects that are happening at Fidelity. But she also said that there are some major hurdles still, like privacy and usability.
Too often, we see Bitcoin and blockchain technologies as solutions in search of a problem. We don't just need these systems to be technically better. We need them to be more user-friendly.
And Tanya, I think is like, I don't even think people care so much about what it was that she was saying about blockchain. But by her being there, she seemed to give this technology a sense of legitimacy. She's the CEO of Fidelity.
Right, right. Okay, so let's quickly go to something else that happened this week. Just yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg, another famous Bostonian or formerly Bostonian, the CEO and founder of Facebook, he was in town to give a commencement speech at Harvard. And you were there. What did he have to say to graduates?
So he talked to them about the need to live a life of purpose. But Tanya, I think maybe it's because I am so used to hearing politicians. But the thing that I think was most interesting is that at times this man who insists he is not running for higher office, he sounded like he was giving a bit of a stump speech. Here he is talking about income inequality.
Today, we have a level of wealth inequality that hurts everyone. Now, let's face it. There is something wrong with our system when I can leave here and make billions of dollars in 10 years, while millions of students can't even afford to pay off their loans, let alone start a business.
You know, what's really interesting about this, Asma, is he's notorious for not giving very good speeches. He's done well over the years. He's done better and better over the years. But you're right. He was poised. It sounded very much like a stump speech.
Right? Like who's talking about all these sort of potpourri of progressive public policies at a commencement speech?
Yes. Well, Asma Khalid leads our business and technology team, Bostonomics. You can follow them on Twitter at Bostonomics. Thank you very much, Asma.
You're welcome.
And since we just heard those political words from Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, we want to bring you some words from an actual politician this afternoon, speaking at Wellesley College.
You may have heard that things didn't exactly go the way I planned. But you know what? I'm doing okay.
That was former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking to graduates at her alma mater. And she updated the grads on what she's been up to since the 2016 election.
Long walks in the woods. Organizing my closets, right? I won't lie, Chardonnay helped a little too.
Secretary Clinton then got a little more serious. She remembered back to her own Wellesley commencement in 1969, when she addressed her class in the midst of Vietnam and a difficult political moment.
We were furious about the past presidential election of a man whose presidency would eventually end in disgrace with his impeachment for obstruction of justice. After firing the person running the investigation into him at the Department of Justice. But here's what I want you to know. We got through that tumultuous time. And once again, we began to thrive as our society changed laws and opened the circle of opportunity and rights wider and wider for more Americans. We revved up the engines of innovation and imagination. We turned back a tide of intolerance and embraced inclusion.
That inclusion and political change, Clinton said, came from the activism of young people staying true to their values. She set this as a challenge to the women of Wellesley.
So whatever your dreams are today, dream even bigger. Wherever you have set your sights, raise them even higher. And above all, keep going. Don't do it because I asked you to. Do it for yourselves. Do it for truth and reason. Do it because the history of Wellesley and this country tells us it's often during the darkest times when you can do the most good. Double down on your passions. Be bold. Try. Fail. Try again and lean on each other. Hold on to your values. Never give up on those dreams. I'm very optimistic about the future because I think after we've tried a lot of other things, we get back to the business of America. I believe in you with all my heart.
Inspirational words from Secretary Hillary Clinton earlier this afternoon at Wellesley College.